This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Unencumbered by political correctness, undeterred in her mission to spread the truth, unafraid to be a true conservative, she's unapologetic, uncompromising, unwavering, and an undeniably powerful voice when we need it most. This is Rose Unplugged.
All of you out there know that Mike Lindell and MyPillow have been part of this cancel culture. They want to make up for not being in the big stores to get the word out about how many hundreds of products that they have that you might not even know about. They're having this $25 extravaganza. Two-pack multi-use MyPillows, just $25. MyPillow sandals, $25. Six-pack towel sets, $25. For the first time ever, the premium MyPillows with all-new Giza fabric, any size, $25. Go to MyPillow.com and make sure that you use promo code ROSE. MyPillow.com, promo code ROSE. And when you do, you will get free shipping on your entire order.
This is Ashley Klingensmith with Americans for Prosperity. We are building a movement to reverse course on Bidenomics and its broken promises. It is called Prosperity is Possible. Prosperity is Possible promotes policies that break down the government barriers holding people back so everyone can chase their unique American dream. Join the movement for a stronger economy. Visit prosperityispossible.com to learn more about our solutions and how you can get involved. That's prosperityispossible.com.
Joining me today on this episode of Rose Unplugged is someone I've had on many times before, the author of Get Trump, The Threat to Civil Liberties, Due Process, and Our Constitutional Rule of Law. And that is Alan Dershowitz. Not only is he the New York Times bestselling author and one of America's most respected legal scholars, but he's also been called one of the most prominent and consistent defenders of civil liberties in America. Thank you, Professor Dershowitz, for joining us today. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Political opponents of Donald Trump seem to stop at nothing to get him ahead of the presidential election. Initially, they had hoped to stop him from running in 2024 at any cost, but that hasn't really worked, has it?
No, they filed this absolutely foolish lawsuit, stimulated by my former colleague, Lawrence Tribe at Harvard, a totally frivolous lawsuit, trying to get him off the ballot on the ground that he was an insurrectionist under the 14th Amendment. I said from day one, and I wrote in my book extensively, that this is obviously against the purpose of the 14th Amendment in history, and I was proved right, and Professor Tribe was proved dead wrong. But that didn't stop them.
No.
They're still trying in every possible way to get him off ballots, to try to prevent him from running, basically to try to prevent you from voting for him if you want to vote for him, or me from voting against him if I want to vote against him. I haven't made up my mind who I'm voting for or against in this election, but I don't want the heavy thumb of Democratic politics to be on the scale when I decide who to vote for. I want to be able to be free to vote for whoever I want or vote against anyone I want. And that's what they're trying to stop through this warfare, lawfare, weaponization of the Constitution and the criminal justice system.
Yeah. And you know what? Most people really appreciate you because you've been very consistent when it comes to defending civil liberty. You don't look at party, but at liberty. At the end of the day, it's all about that more than anything else.
Well, I mean, I'm a lawyer. I'm a constitutional lawyer.
Right.
I'm a professor for 50 years and then 10 years emeritus at Harvard. I care about the constitutional rights of everybody. I don't care who they are. And, you know, too many people look at the Constitution simply as a weapon to be used by their side against the other side. And that's what I'm strongly opposed to.
Are these efforts unconstitutional? And I know that you said they have been, and you have the background to prove it. But can you explain to us why? Can you go a little deeper into why we have to understand this, whether we're on the left or the right? I think this is important for all of us to understand.
Yes. The Constitution requires that every adult, it used to be every adult male, but now it's every male or female, black and white, over the age of 18, gets the right to vote. And the 14th Amendment, which was part of that process, doesn't take it away from people who some people think may be involved in insurrections. There was no process in the 14th Amendment for determining who could run and who can't run. And in fact, if that were to be the case, then nobody who's participating in these horrible, horrible neo-Nazi protests on college campuses, these violent neo-Nazi anti-Semitic ones that say death to America, they couldn't run either. I mean, the idea of applying the insurrection clause only to some people and others. What about the people who conducted the Black Lives Matter violent demonstrations on the west of the United States, burning down trucks and cars and setting fire to police stations? Who is going to decide who's an insurrectionist? One person's insurrectionist is another person's, you know, hero. So I've always thought that that provision of the Constitution has no application to Donald Trump or to anybody else.
They were so bent on preventing him from running.
What they're now saying is if he's convicted of a felony in New York, which has an 85% jury pool that hates Donald Trump, that he loses his security clearance if he goes to jail. I mean, that's absurd. And they're trying to keep him in the courthouse every day to make sure he can't campaign. And they impose the gag order on him. What do you think that trial was scheduled now? Usually it would take much more time for a trial to be scheduled, but it was scheduled now to keep him from the campaign trail.
Yeah. How effective do you think they're going to be? It's really hard to gauge this election because Pennsylvania didn't look good for him during the primary. How effective are they going to be in the end, do you think?
I think Pennsylvania is going to be a very, very close state. And one of the reasons is going to be the war that's going on in Gaza today. Yeah. We don't know what its status will be in November, but, you know, Senator Fetterman has been the hero. But Biden has not done a good job. He's willing, apparently, to sacrifice pro-Israel voters in Pennsylvania. And there are so many Jewish, Christian, and other pro-Israel voters in Pennsylvania. He's apparently prepared to sacrifice that for a few hundred thousand Arab and Muslim votes in Michigan. The difference is that the Arab and Muslim votes have nowhere to go in Michigan. They can't vote for Trump. They believe he, you know, was in charge of this Muslim ban.
Yeah.
But the pro-Israel community in Pennsylvania could go either way.
Yeah.
I mean, their votes are up for grabs. That could determine Pennsylvania.
You know, and it could indeed. And I just wonder why they haven't been more outspoken about what's happening. And I do want to talk to you about what's been happening on college campuses. Before I do want to wrap up, though, on your book, Get Trump,
sure.
The Threat to Civil Liberties, Due Process, and Our Constitutional Rule of Law. Shouldn't we all, Professor Dershowitz, be concerned about this departure from constitutional norms? I mean, we might think that, hey, that doesn't really affect us directly right now, so I'm not going to think about it too much. But can you explain why we should all be concerned about this departure?
It affects us very directly, very directly. Once a precedent is established that you can use criminal law, civil law, constitutional law, impeachment law in a weaponized way against one group or one person, it's much easier to use it against other people. And the very rule of law, which distinguishes our country from tyrannies, is in danger when we see it being used by one side against the other. The New York case, for example, I've been practicing writing, teaching criminal law for 60 years. I think I know it pretty well.
Yeah.
I cannot understand what the crime is in New York. After 9 days of trial, I have no idea what he is charged with or how I could possibly defend him. It's just like being in a sack of Jell-O where, you know, every time you move, something moves. You know, the first few days were all about, was there a payment made to a rag to buy people catch and kill? Yeah, but it wasn't illegal. Was a payment made to the woman, Stormy Daniels? Yeah, but it's not illegal.
Right.
We're 9 days into the case, and I haven't heard a word about what's illegal. So it's very dangerous because, you know, today it's Trump. Tomorrow it's Biden. The next day it's your uncle. And then the day after that, it's you.
Right.
You know, when Stalin and Lavrenti Beria, the head of the KGB, were killing people, Beria came to Stalin and said, show me the man and I'll find you the crime. That's what Bragg has been doing. And that's what Letitia James, the attorney general of New York, has been doing. They first decided to get Trump and then they looked for the crime. And in Bragg's case, the district attorney, Manhattan, they couldn't find the crime. So they made one up.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
You know, you do talk about in the book about those who defend Donald Trump or anyone that would be in his position, quite frankly, even those who oppose him politically, it seems that there's an effort to silence them. And there again, we're looking at free speech rights. Those are being attacked. And also, Professor Dershowitz, if you would just address the media, how is it that they can feel good about themselves at the end of the day? When they have left objective reporting and there is clearly a slant in their reporting.
Well, they feel good about themselves on the way to the bank. CNN, you cannot get a truthful analysis of any legal matter regarding Trump on CNN. All of their commentators are bought and paid for, and they have a narrative, and they have to proclaim, and some of them have, that the case against Donald Trump in New York is strong. I'm embarrassed that one of my former students, who's a very good student, is a commentator, paid commentator on CNN, and he's talking about how strong the case is. I gave the guy an A+. He's really smart. He's smarter than that. He knows there's no case there, but he wants his paycheck. And he's just towing the party line. And he's going to be shocked when the rest of the evidence comes out, and there's nothing there. There's nothing there. And the media has been taking a similar line on Israel.
Yes.
If you watch CNN or listen to the New York Times, there's a moral equivalence between the murderers, butchers, and rapists of Hamas and the young, brave soldiers of the Israel Defense Forces. That moral equivalence is just unjustified by the facts. But the media insists on reporting it because they want their constituencies to continue to watch them. Now, it's hurting CNN. They are now very low in the polls and rankings and in watches. And I think it's hurting the credibility of the New York Times. But they don't seem to care.
No, they really don't. They really don't. You know, in fact, so let's talk about what's been happening on college campuses. I do feel that, first of all, President Biden has denounced in the strongest of terms the anti-Semitism that we're seeing right now on those campuses.
I don't agree with that. I don't think he's done it in the strongest of terms.
No.
He's done it in mediocre terms. What he says is he condemns anti-Semitism, but in the same breath, he says one thing, anti-Semitism. Then he says, but I also condemn anti-Arab, anti-Muslim, Islamophobia, and anti-Palestinian American, not a word, for example, about Israeli Americans. No, it's one-sided. He wants to have it both ways. At a time like this, when there is no Islamophobia to speak of, and there's massive, massive anti-Semitism,
yes,
he ought to just uniquely and singularly condemn anti-Semitism without having to pander to the voters of Michigan, which is exactly what he's doing.
He really is. And I follow you on social media, and you have a podcast, too, by the way. And we'll mention that before this is over. But you talk about the funding of these campus takeovers. You know, some people will say, oh, it's not, you know, you can't prove that it's been funded by some leftist groups. And you do make a distinction, by the way, I've read, between the left and then the progressive, and you call them largely regressive, radical left.
Yeah, no, I'm a liberal. I've voted for every Democratic president since John Kennedy. I don't know who I'm going to vote for in this election, but up until now, every Democratic president. I consider myself a liberal. I support a woman's right to choose, gay rights, climate, reasonable climate control, reasonable gun control. I'm a liberal, but I'm very anti what they call progressive. I love Teddy Roosevelt's progressive movement, but these progressives are they believe in censorship. They're intolerant. They are willing to use violence, many of them, and they're, I think, enemies of America and enemies of decency. And so I make a sharp distinction, but that's historically always been the case. The worst enemies of liberals and true conservatives have been the extremists on both sides. The enemies of liberals have always been the Bolsheviks, the communists, the radicals, the anarchists, and the enemies of true conservatives have often been the right-wing extremist people who are, you know, part of the Ku Klux Klan.
But they seem to have the largest and loudest voice, and you talk a lot. I was reading something that you had written about the origins of the anti-Israel rhetoric that we're hearing right now.
Yep.
Yeah, what would you say those origins are? More, I mean, I know you just talked about the radical left, but you can go back a little further than our radical left, right?
Oh, yeah, there's no question. Look, the origins of Hamas is Hitler. There's no doubt about that.
Yes.
The Grand Mufti of Jerusalem was the spiritual father of the Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, and all of the extremist Islamic groups. And the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem was a Nazi. He moved to Berlin. He was declared a war criminal. He was a friend of Hitler's. He was complicit with Eichmann. He was complicit with the effort to kill all the Jews in the Balkan area. And as I say, he was called a war criminal after the war, and he had to escape to Egypt, where they gave him, along with a lot of other Nazis, complete support. And that's where the Muslim Brotherhood emanated from. That's where Yasser Arafat emanated from. So the origin of the anti-Israel movement is the Nazi movement. That's a historical fact.
Yeah, I believe that. I do. You can see it clearly. And, you know, when you think about all of these protesters, did you ever think, I just actually interviewed a Holocaust survivor, sweetest guy. He and his sister were twins and they survived the Holocaust. And he has an amazing story. But I asked him this, and I'll ask you the same question. Did you ever think that you would see this day, the day of such hatred once again of the Jewish people?
I never thought I'd see it to this degree, but as far back as 1990, I wrote a book called Chutzpah, in which I predicted that the left on college campuses would turn against Israel and the Jews. Not to this degree, but I was one of the first to predict this development because I saw it happening in front of me. Remember, I was right there.
That's right.
I've lectured at 100 universities around the world, and I've seen the hatred. In many European universities, in Britain, in Holland, in France, I've lectured and spoken and been at all of these places. And so I saw it coming, but not to this degree. Mm-hmm. I never thought that the children of or the grandchildren of Jewish families would join these radical leftists and join with Hamas. But it's happening, and it's happening all over the world.
Yeah.
And the real question is, why Israel? Why are there no protests against what the Chinese are doing to the Uyghurs? Why is there no protest when Syria gassed its own people? Why is there no protest? You can't get a single protest on a college campus about Ukraine and Russia.
Right.
You can't get a protest about Darfur, which is going through yet another massacre and starvation. But you mention Israel and everybody comes out.
Yeah.
Everybody comes out. They're marching. What is it about the Jews and about the nation state of the Jewish people that stimulates such hatred when other factors that are so far much worse, they don't get any interest whatsoever?
You know, Benjamin Netanyahu, you have defended him and taken a little heat from some over your defense of him. And I personally have always really liked Benjamin Netanyahu. And I found it interesting that he should make this return at such a time as this, if you will. And you bring up Russia and Ukraine. No one is calling for a ceasefire there. No one is telling Ukraine how to fight that war. And yet we have so many weighing in and telling Netanyahu how he should proceed where Israel and Hamas are concerned.
Well, Bibi and I have been friends since 1970 when he was a student at MIT and I was a young assistant professor at Harvard. We met back then. We've known each other as close friends for years. I don't agree with all of his politics. He doesn't agree with all of my politics.
Right.
But we're close friends, and I've been an advisor, not only to him, but to every Israeli prime minister since really Golda Meir.
Wow.
I've known every prime minister. In fact, I have a book about my relationship with Israeli public officials through the years called Defending Israel, My Toughest Client. I have close relationships with people in Israel, but I also have good relationships with Palestinians. When I go to Israel, I go to Ramallah. I meet with the prime minister. I've met with Abbas on more than one occasion. My goal is to bring about a fair peace. But right now, the Palestinians are not looking for peace. They're looking for defeat of Israel.
Yeah. That is the bottom line. And one last question. I read that you said that these protests are an incubator of sorts for potential terrorism. Can you give me a little more detail about what your thoughts behind that? But I can actually see. Yeah. I can see what you're saying. I really can.
Oh, it's absolutely going to happen. I can tell you because I represented a lot of the protesters in the late 60s and 70s. Let me give you one example. Catherine Boudin. Nice girl. You know, when I knew her, she was 18, 19 years old. She was a student, and she sought my advice on some things. And then she became a protester, and ultimately she became a murderer. She murdered two police officers and two Brinks guards in Rockland County. She tried to blow up Fort Dix.
Oh my
she
God.
Succeeded in blowing up her own house, killing some of her own housemates. The transition from extremist protester to terrorist, for some, is not a big jump. And I saw that happen to others as well. The Weather Underground, the Weathermen,
yes.
All were people who started out as protesters and became terrorists. And it's going to happen here. I guarantee you that among the people who are protesting either inside or outside of Columbia has just canceled its graduation. I was supposed to be there. There are some who will be groomed and will be solicited to plant bombs. And they will. And it's coming to a theater near you.
Wow, that's so sad. Professor Dershowitz, author of the book, Get Trump, The Threat to Civil Liberties, Due Process, and Our Constitutional Rule of Law. And I would also encourage you to check him out on social media. He just weighs in on all of this, and he has so many things to say about these subjects that we discussed today. And Professor, as a evangelical Christian, I'm going to tell you that we have always been taught to pray for the peace of Jerusalem, and I continue to do so to this day.
Well, thank God for evangelical Christians. They have been among our strongest supporters, not only of Israel, but of the Jewish people. So my sincere thanks to evangelical Christians who support Israel.
Thank you so much for your time today. Take care.
Thank you.
All right, take it. Bye.
You too. Bye.